World famous Phil Henry Show and PhilHenryShow.com. And welcome back here from the El Pacifico every night till 10 o'clock on the West Coast, 1 a.m. on the East Coast. And it has, it's been a fantastically interesting process here from the very beginning, rebooting the show back in August. You know, this is a radio show that is an entertainment product primarily. We don't do news talk because I hate it, for starters. But every now and again, you know, there's a story that you want to pay attention to. And that has to do with, like, elections and stuff. So, you know, I was doing what I could do tonight, Margaret, in covering this stuff.
I know, but you're not doing... No one does a good job, Phil, doing this kind of... this dreck. No one does a good job with it, and I just think it's a waste of your time. You can listen to any of these talk shows, and they'll be covering this stuff.
Well, no, I understand that, but, you know, we had Larry Grover waiting, and we had the two guys from West Virginia...
And they're going to do what they're going to do, which is just the same drivel. Now, I am a liberal, and I believe very much in President Obama. And you can make as much fun of me as you want to, that's fine, but I'd rather be me than that meathead Larry Grover, who is a unapologetic Tea Party imbecile. And I like Larry. He's a good man. He has been perverted by an obviously very sick home environment. His mother, I suspect...
All right, well, let's not get into his mother and his relationships with women or anything like that. You're right. Larry's a nice guy, but he's completely politically the opposite of you. That's what's going on in this country right now, you know. That's what's going on in this country right now. Everybody thinks everybody else is an idiot. That's exactly what's happening. Everyone thinks everyone else is an idiot. Everybody that doesn't want to be lumped into a category lumps everybody into a category. It's like this moron that was sending me messages on Facebook. This guy starts off because he can't drink. This guy, I'm telling you, folks, if you can't hold a drink, then just don't drink, you know. This guy sends me a message on Facebook saying that... I'm a liberal turd, and I'm a social whatever, you know, like I'm a 60s. It's the same thing that I hear all of these idiots say. People who don't know anything about me, they hear one thing, and they automatically got you figured out. So fine. So, you know, so I did that to that guy. I said, oh, you're a conservative. You don't like Obamacare. You must be Tea Party, man. Hey, don't call me Tea Party. Well, hey, you know what? If you don't like being stereotyped, then don't do it. Because as far as I'm concerned, that's what this guy sounded like to me, like this Tea Party jackass. And that's where we're at in this country. Nobody's listening to anybody. I don't want to get into a big discussion about it. You're right, you know.
And that's what you get for going on Facebook. You talk about the land of the lost.
Yeah, man, Facebook, man, that's bad over there, real bad.
Yeah, I wouldn't go on a Facebook for $1 million.
You don't have a Facebook page, do you?
No, I don't.
Why not?
Because it's for idiots. I'm not going to go over there. I'd rather be on Twitter and everything.
You only have to do 140 characters.
Yeah, Twitter's better because I don't have to write that much. Plus, on Facebook, you got to put pictures up and stuff.
So it's too much trouble.
Yeah.
Well, I have the Facebook Margaret Gray fan page, and for all the good it does, I might as well take it down. I've got 414 fans on that ridiculous ass page. I'd like to put my foot through the...
What are you getting all pissed off about?
Well, I'm over there posting. You know that we did the gospel set over at Hell on Earth, right?
Yeah.
Were you not making a comment?
I'm not going to make any comment about these sets you do on the weekend. You're over there at Hell on Earth, and then you're over at the Ham Hock, and you're at some other place. I've never heard of these places. You're complaining about Frank booking you into these dumps, right?
Yes, I'm complaining about Frank booking me into these dumps. I took that song by the Cowsills, as you know, and I gave it a reworking of Vampire Feel, and everyone thought it sounded like garbage, so I gave up on that. I can't make anyone happy.
Hey, look, Margaret, do you want to have a singing career, or don't you?
Of course I don't. I like singing.
All right, then don't let Frank book you into these dumps. The Ham Hock. And then you got your road manager rolled.
I didn't get him rolled.
Well, he got rolled for the cash receipts or something?
Yes. And then I said to the owner of this toilet that we were playing, this was last weekend, this Hell on Earth.
Yeah.
I said to the guy, my husband will be in touch with you, and he doesn't play.
Oh, brother.
Oh, he don't play, huh?
That's exactly what I said.
Yeah, but Frank is a dang... Frank can't be threatening to blow people's cars up, because that's what he did, didn't he?
No comment.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what he did. He threatened to get a shoebox in the guy's car.
No comment.
Well, then don't bring it up. You talking about that guy he knows in Canada?
Phil, do you want to get me blown up?
Well, then what is it with you? You can't be throwing that stuff around. And Frank, he's a lawyer. He's going to get in trouble.
Well, don't worry about it. Frenchie from Montreal will take care of things.
Frenchie from Montreal.
Oh, well, laugh it up, Phil.
Well, hey, I didn't do anything with the guy. I'll tell you something. If I were you, I wouldn't be throwing around anybody's name like that, okay? And especially going to some club. These guys that run clubs, they're not a bunch of wilting violets. These guys are, if the guy's ripping you off, I'd go to the cops. I wouldn't be going to Frank and have him call up some friend of his in Montreal.
Don't worry about it. We've got it under control. Frenchie's got it under control.
Frenchie's got it under control. Speaking of Frenchie, man, when I was doing my little dissertation there on Saturday, I was talking about the Civil War, the Lincoln Commission and everything. And I had been reading in this Lincoln report and the commission report that looked into his assassination, and I was looking at the transcripts and everything. And my God, when they were talking, they start the witness list out with a bunch of Southerners, because what they're trying to establish in this commission transcript, they're trying to establish, well, okay, let's see, do you know John Wilkes Booth? What did you know about him? Did you know this person, that person? Were you in Washington? All of these guys, to a man, had been up to Canada multiple times.
Well, yes, but they weren't the only ones, Phil. There was a lot of travel going to Canada during the Civil War, from Northerners as well.
Well, the northern guys that were going up there, look, the Confederates were in Canada to plot war strategy, war operations, different operations by what was called the Confederate Secret Service, which was not really an official organization so much as it was a loosely confederated, if you'll pardon your redundancy there, loosely confederated group of individuals working on behalf of the South. And there was a whole bunch of stuff they were doing. They were plotting border raids. They were plotting bombings. They were plotting the kidnapping of Lincoln. I mean, it was something well known to the to Southern spies that Booth had proposed this. But they're all doing it in Montreal, Toronto, and places like that, you know. Now, the northern guys that were up there were federal spies spying on them, you know.
Now, they wasn't up there plotting to blow the South up.
What?
Why they got to do that?
The South's up there plotting to blow up the North.
What does the North got to go up there for? The North can stay where the North is. They don't have to go to Canada to do that.
Why doesn't the South stay where the South is?
Because the South is down South, man. They want to be up North, above the North.
They wanted to be north of the North so that the South, right?
Wait a minute. What I'm saying, Bud, is that the Confederates were in Canada because that gave them access to the northern states, like right over the border. You understand?
Yeah. But how come the North was up there?
Because they're spying on them, man.
That's what I'm saying. They can't blow the South up.
Why do they want to go to Canada to blow the South up? The South is right there. All I got to do is step over the border there in the South, right?
What? You don't even know what you're talking about.
I don't know what I'm talking about.
You're talking to an idiot, Phil.
Wait. Hold on for a minute. Forget it. Never mind.
You're saying that the North can go to the North?
What? The North can go to the North? Bud, I'm saying, you know exactly what I'm saying, and you're playing stupid.
Yeah, he is, man. He told me one time he did it on purpose.
I did it on purpose one time, not this time.
Are you really trying to tell me that you can't figure out why the North was in Canada? They're not going to blow the South up from the North. They don't need to, man. But the South can be in the North so that the North... I'm going to kick your ass. All right, we're going to be right back here in the world. Anyway, you understand what I was saying.
No, I don't understand when you say the federal spy. I know that, but you said other Northerners were there.
Yeah, there were doctors. There was one guy that testified who was a doctor. He was going between New York State and Windsor, or he was going between one of the northern states and Canada. He was a doctor, and some of his patients and clients were Canadians, and so he was going between the U.S. and Canada. And while he was there, he, like so many private citizens before and since, was contacted by the United States government and said, sir, you're a citizen of the U.S. We were wondering if you wouldn't mind. And he said, certainly anything for my country. And he, you know, he, all you do is you just take note of certain people. The U.S. government does it today. The U.S. government will talk to business people that are traveling. Would you mind this, that, or something else? Or may, they may be contacted by private citizens to say, I'm traveling here, I'm traveling there. I'd be happy to be of service to my country somehow. And sometimes it's as simple as taking note of a name on a package, or where a package is being mailed to, or where a package is being mailed from, or what business a certain company is having with another company, what country that company is in. That's stuff that is very easily ascertained. You don't have to have some deep cover agent doing it. You can have just a private citizen operating as the eyes and ears for you. All right, folks. So that's my small little itsy bitsy, small kind of a, you know, whatever bit of news there here on the Phil Hendry Show. My reading there of the whole whatever the hell it is, the Confederate effort. All right, we'll be back with more here on the world famous Phil Hendry Show. It's kind of a lazy Tuesday night, you know, the election, to hell with it. Ah, screw it. No matter who the president is, we will survive. World famous Phil Hendry Show. All right. World famous Phil Hendry Show, philhendryshow.com. All right. So do you know how to do that?
Yeah, I can get it.
Got to set up a conference call. I asked Matt about it. I have to do a conference call next week for business. We all get together and discuss, you know.
Really? And these conference calls are with who?
Well, different people across the country, you know, sales and so on and so forth, doing it from the car, that kind of thing.
You got all set up in your car and stuff. That's pretty, you know, kind of rich, isn't it?
No, it ain't rich. What do you mean rich?
Well, are you doing conference calls from your car?
Yeah, I'm talking on them.
Well, how do you do that?
What do you mean, how do I do that?
It's against the law to use your phone.
It's against the law to have your hands on a phone, man. You got to have a hands-free phone.
But you don't have a Bluetooth.
No, I use the speaker in the car.
That's what I mean. You've got one of those rich guy setups.
Yeah.
That ain't a rich guy setup. Come on.
That Frank has that. He sits in the car and acts like he's a big shot, going, well, this and that and this and that.
No, it ain't a rich guy setup. It's a feature of the car. It's a feature of the car. And believe me, it took me forever to figure it out because I'm not that bright to begin with when it comes to that kind of stuff, pairing the phone up with this and that and something else. No, it's a feature of the car. It's something that I use, and yeah, I can drive down the road. As a matter of fact, it's the best time for me to be talking on a phone while I'm driving. And I'm not using my hands, and I'm not texting, and I'm not doing any of that stuff. So I'm, you know, I'm zipping down the road, and I'm paying attention to things. And I'm also getting some work done, you know. But I'm just trying to figure out how I can do it, because I got to start setting them up myself. And I always used to think you had to have some major corporate account, and Matt was just telling me it doesn't take anything.
Yeah, you can probably call up a different phone company and stuff.
And let me ask you a question, man. Were you using my phone?
Maybe.
Because I had a $300 bill that was overdue.
Oh, my God. You were on his phone.
No.
I lent you my phone that one day, man. I don't know what you were doing. What were you doing? You're not on Facebook.
He's texting back and forth his girlfriend. Shut up.
Yep, that's what you're doing. Do you understand that those texts cost money, man? Do you understand that?
Yeah.
Do you know that you saw that message that came in? You're over your text limit.
I thought you had a special plan.
I ain't got no special plan, man, that's going to be letting you text forever and a day. And I get the bill, it's overdue, $337. What the hell are you doing, man?
Well, when we went down to, well...
When you went down to what, Miami? When you were down in Miami that time? You know that costs money? You know, when I was down in the Caribbean, I was trying to update our page. I was trying to update the website, and I'm in the Caribbean. That's a lot of bread. And AT&T, let me just say, you ain't kidding anybody, man, you know. I just don't have the time right now to change my plan. But when I do, I'm going over to Verizon big time. I'm done with you. I'm finished. Because you guys with the plan this and the plan that, and you can save money here and save money there. Today, more than ever before, especially when you're doing a job like mine, I can't afford what you guys are doing. And you cats don't get it, man. Everybody is working now. Everyone is working using their phones. Everyone's working using their homes. Everyone's working using their cars. It's everything is an office now. And you jackasses with this plan and that plan, why don't you just figure this one out? Everything is business. you know.
Well, did you get that business line on the internet or not?
No, I'm not going to get a business line on the internet. I'm not going to spend $1,500 a month because Time Warner Cable has found another way to make money. Those guys they're beautiful, man. I mean, when you really know when a company has you by the you know what's and you got no options, man, they give you that big toothy grin on the one hand, and on the other hand, they just got their hands shoved deep in your pocket. And Time Warner, enjoy better.
Yeah.
You really, that guy bugs you, doesn't he? I've seen you grit your teeth when that guy comes on TV and he goes, enjoy better.
Yeah, well, guy, I want to kick his ass.
Yeah, I do too, unfortunately. I really do. I hate that guy's voice.
But he's all trying to act like he's all special and stuff.
I think he's very sexy.
Oh, is that right? Enjoy better. All I'm telling you is that, you know, when we had the internet outage that one night, and we did not have our ability to do our video cast, I'm getting a whole bunch of this double talk from these cats, and I'm saying, look it, man, all you got to do is I know what we have to replace. We got to replace a modem. We probably have to replace a router. We may even need a hub. We may need to, you know, a whole bunch of technical stuff, guys, that you don't need to understand. And this guy's saying, well, you know, Mr. Henry, you can have the guys come to the office and they can set up the this and the that and the business, and they wear a really special shirt and they wear a fright wig. And
fright wig?
Well, the guy's talking like they have a special uniform, and they arrive in a van and they wear latex gloves with sunglasses, and they come in and they leave like they're in the Matrix or something, like that guy, you know, Mr. Anderson.
You're kidding me.
Yes, I'm kidding, but that's what it sounded like. And I said, no, I don't think I need that, man. You know, all I need is for this to work, you know. Don't give me this, you know, well, if it's a bit. I said, look at Jack, you know, and with all due respect, I know that there are homes out there of families, people, you know, lots of folks in a house. They're using the internet and they're doing just fine. I don't demand anything of the internet service that I have that's all that special. I don't demand any, you know, we're not over encumbering the service. You know, I'm not morning, noon, and night on a desktop. Most of the crap that I'm doing is Wi-Fi. So, you know, I screamed at the guy. He started crying, and he left. And, you know, he didn't cry.
Yeah, that'd be funny if he started to cry, though.
No, he didn't. But then I went out behind the office, and he said to me, well, we did have to replace some hardware. I said, I understand that. And he says, you know, you're down, because we're close to the ocean here, and we do have rust and all kinds of crap, you know. Now, I went out behind the building, and I noticed that there is a particular kind of plant. You had the name of it, Margaret, the one with the blue flower.
I forget the name of it. It's a very lovely plant, but it does. It's a creeping vine, like ivy, and so it creeps along, and it wraps itself around some of those wires.
Yes, exactly. And I saw that, and I said, you know, this is probably half of our problem, man, because this creeping vine is going to creep all the way up there, and it gives me the creeps. So I'm going to bring in a whole crew of guys that are fresh out of prison and just can't wait to get their hands on machetes and stuff and let them go at it and just cut all that stuff away.
You can't fill that. It's a very beautiful vine. Your neighbors will be upset.
Well, that's just too bad.
Yeah, who cares if they get upset? We got a business to run.
That is a very beautiful plant.
I don't care if it's beautiful. It's killing me. It's strangling the thing.
What thing?
You know, you saw that, man. It's wrapping itself around these... It's wrapping itself around at least one or two of those lines up there. I know that they're probably just electrical utility lines of some kind. They maybe have nothing to do with the cable service or the internet service. I just don't like it. I just don't want to see that. That's all I need, man. The guy's going to come out here one day and say, oh, well, no wonder you've got that plant that has strangled the life out of every utility coming into this house, and now it's coming for you, Mr. Henry. And I'm even starting to lift a little bit, Thur, because, you know, it's wrapping itself around my tongue. Like that.
You know, so, you know what I think your problem is? I think you're overworked. I think your mind is coming unglued.
Yeah, you're coming unmoored.
I'm coming unmoored. Anyway, so, but you know what, man? It's a great place to work, I'll tell you that. And it's been windy and cold and woo! Yeah!
Man, I noticed the other night it was freezing-ass cold in here.
Really cold. And I'm welcoming that because it used to be, in the summer months, it gets hotter than hell in here. But it has been cold and it's getting colder. It's a beautiful thing, man. I dig it. All right, world-famous Phil Henry Show at philhenryshow.com. Now, at the end of January, the Sketch Fest in San Francisco wants you to write that down. Drunk History and Comedy Central wants you to write that down. IFC in January wants you to write that down. And we'll be doing more Saturday bonus shows, History and Tequila. Want you to write that down. And then we want you to write down this. We want you to write down our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/PhilHenryFans, PHANS, and twitter.com/RealPhilHenry. I say every day
when the sun is down. The Phil Henry Show is going to be back. Maybe. You remember when your baby left this town?
World famous Phil Henry Show here, back in studio at the El Pacifico. And we started the show here with a story that I'm going to revisit just briefly. And I want to find out. I'm going to stay on this, man, because I want to find out.
It is very weird.
It's weird, all right. And we were just talking about history and my love of history. If we're going to do some more of those Saturday shows.
Well, why do you have to be drunk when you do them?
You know why? I'll tell you why. Because I believe, first of all, I think drunk history, that's a great idea. But secondly, I think that it's a good example for people to see a man having drinks and speaking in a lucid manner about something. See, I'm slamming those tequila. I'm not slamming the shots. I'm having tequila shots, and I'm having beers. Now, that's a nice drink, you know?
Man, are you kidding, man? That's hardcore.
What's hardcore about that? You have a nice drink of tequila, you have a beer. I'm not slamming them down, man, one after the other. Only a jackass does that. You understand? Guys that drink like that are jackass. They can't drink. They don't know how to drink. And they wind up on their back, throwing up into their girlfriend's purse, and they think they're drinking. They ain't drinking. So, first of all, I think it's good to set an example that, yes, a guy can sit down, have himself an Añejo and a Utica Club, which somebody tweeted me the other day, Utica Club, man, that's skunk beer. Well, wait a second. You're talking to me about skunk beer? This is a country that drinks Budweiser. Budweiser. Hello?
What's wrong with Budweiser? That's good beer.
Oh, okay.
Well, what are you saying? You're saying it isn't?
I'm not saying anything. I'm just saying, where does anybody get off calling anything skunk when the number one beer in this country is Budweiser? Don't give me anything about Budweiser's fine. Budweiser is not top-of-the-line beer. I don't care what anybody tells you. It's good old-fashioned, regular, run-of-the-mill, assembly-line lager. It ain't nothing that to write home about. I say that with all due respect. If they're a sponsor, I take it all back, but I doubt that they are. Thank you. Now, so that's what I'm having, you know, and that's number one. Number two, one of the things we were talking about was World War II, and this is a story that's really important, man, because it has to do with art. It has to do with art that was stolen. This is the last vestige. If World War II is ever really going to leave us, and it's taken its sweet time, I'll tell you that, because there's always something coming up, something turning up that Adolf did that we got to figure out and we got to deal with. And here's a new one. This is some guy, these Germans, I'm not saying the Germans themselves, I'm saying the old generation of Germans, boy, they got a pair on them. I don't know where they get off with some of the chutzpah that they got. This is some old creep who was the son of the guy that was in charge of confiscating this art and selling it off to make money for the Reich. Cornelius Gerlitt is the son of a man by the name of Gerlitt, obviously, and he had a really... Hildebrand Gerlitt. This is the guy's name, Hildebrand. And Hildebrand was the guy that was in charge of getting rid of this degenerate art. He was supposed to sell it, so he had to confiscate this art and then sell it off, and obviously the money goes to the Third Reich. Now, one of the a secondary story here, and one of the really amazing bits of convenient moral blindness that the Nazis practiced, was that Mr. Hildebrand Gerlitt was in part Jewish. It's also true that one of the decorated field marshals of World War II, one of the guys that helped build the German Air Force, was Jewish. Field Marshal Milch was his name. But the Nazis just kind of overlooked this stuff. If this guy was good, it's okay.
Well, you know, he's Jewish. Well, you know, that's okay.
Well, wait a minute. I mean, we can... No, it's just... never mind, okay? The Führer signed off on it. It's all good, man. So this guy's a Jewish guy, and his job was to... He was a well-known art dealer. He was commissioned by the Nazis to rid German museums and galleries of degenerate art. He was also the father of the elderly Munich man in whose home the works were reportedly discovered, the son Cornelius Gerland. How about them apples?
This guy got a hold of the dad's stuff.
Exactly. His father, as it turns out, wasn't selling off all of this stuff. His father, as it turns out, was holding on to it. Now, it's quite possible that the father was holding on to some of this stuff so that it would not get sold off and just disseminated and spread throughout the world and we'd never find it again. Maybe he was trying to, in his own way, protect it. But he sure didn't when it came to Junior, because Junior took this stuff, $1.4 billion worth. $1.4 billion. Do you understand? That's amazing to me.
Well, I mean, Phil, there are billionaires.
Yeah, but it ain't just laying around the house. It ain't laying around the house. This is laying around the house. This guy...
Are you telling me this was in the apartment?
What do you think I've been talking about?
Yeah, it's in the apartment. That's where they raided in and found it.
Yeah, man, they all stacked on top of each other and stuff.
You know, I mean, the cops in Bavaria, in Munich, busted down the door and went in... Gestapo style. I'm kidding. Just whatever. And they found this $1.4 billion worth of stuff stacked up in the apartment. So if Daddy gave it to the son to, you know, like, you know, Cornelius, I now pass this on to you for you to protect. Well, what's the point? You don't need to protect it anymore, man. We won the war, and the rightful owner should get it back, and the museum should get it back, and the whole world can now go back to the business of enjoying this wonderful art without having a bunch of Nazis, you know? But they didn't do that. This guy has it in the thing. Now, here's the thing that really blows me away. This happened 2 years ago. This old man, Cornelius Gerlet, has not been so much as charged with anything. He hasn't even... I don't even think they've taken a fingerprint. I don't think they've even asked him what toothpaste he uses. Nothing. This guy was... He walked right out of the police station. He cannot be reached for comment. German authorities have remained tight-lipped on certain aspects of the case. What's going on?
Well, it might have to do with national interests, some national security. It may not be any of our beeswax.
Hey, I got news for you, Margaret. This was a world war, so it's everybody's business. It's everybody's business. This was a war that involved the world. You know, everybody was involved. Everybody got killed. Everybody got shot at. Everybody put their ass on the line, so everybody gets to know. Germany's business. Let me tell you something, man. And a lot of this stuff isn't from Germany. It's French, it's Italian, it's Russian, so on. So he stored the collection of works in his Munich apartment for decades, according to Stern magazine. Mr. Gerlet couldn't be reached for comment. The German authorities declined to provide an estimated value of the trove. It didn't confirm the name of the person under investigation for suspected tax evasion. But I saw the figure put at $1.4 billion for some of this stuff, because it's very, very valuable stuff. Mr. Nemitz, who is the prosecutor for the Bavarian authorities, said that although the suspect had been present when the apartment was searched, his whereabouts were unknown. The investigation is continuing, and so far there have been no grounds for an arrest warrant. How did they figure that? Under Germany's strict privacy laws, authorities are prohibited from disclosing the details of tax investigation. The state prosecutor in Augsburg, a small city near Munich, is responsible for investigating white-collar crime. The authorities haven't established the provenance of many of the artworks. Provenance means the actual validity. Is it, in point of fact, what they think it is? In other words, is that an Otto Dix or is it a fake?
What do you mean, a fake?
There's a lot of money in fake pieces of... You didn't know that?
What do you mean, fake?
He just asked that. He's going to tell...
Hold on. Fake, there are people that can duplicate works of art right down to the brushstroke. I mean, they can duplicate it. And then they can take that piece of art and they can say to you, I have an actual, like, you know, a Da Vinci. And if you'd like to buy it, and you, unless you're you have a really critical eye... You may buy that thing for a lot of money. It's like counterfeit money. It's like passing counterfeit money, you know.
Well, how do they figure it out?
There are guys there are art critics and there are art specialists who have absolutely solid gold eyes when it comes to this kind of thing. They can detect whether something's a fake or not. And they are, along with a whole network of people like this around the world, can determine the provenance, that is, the history and the validity of a painting. There's a really cool documentary called Who the Blankety Blank is Jackson Pollock. There was a woman, now get a load of this, her friend bought a painting at a garage sale. And her friend gave it to her. She said, well, this is a nice painting, and I think this would look good, and I don't know, maybe it was a housewarming party or something.
Her friend bought her a painting at a garage sale and gave it to her and let her know that she got it at a garage sale.
I don't know if she let her know, but the thing of it was is she had this painting, and somebody, I don't know who, said, wait, what is that? I think the lady brought it in, and she wanted to sell it. He said, do you know that that's probably a Jackson Pollock? She said, who the hell is he? She never even heard of the guy. He said, well, he was a very famous painter. And she said, you're kidding. No, I think you need to have that appraised. So began this project that this woman undertook to have the provenance of this painting determined. And they couldn't figure it out. They couldn't figure it out for absolute sure whether it was a Jackson Pollock or not. They brought in a guy that analyzed the paint. They brought in a guy that went into Jackson Pollock's studio and chipped up some of the paint from the floor and then compared it to the chemical composition of the paint on that painting, and he was absolutely sure that that's a Jackson Pollock. And then another guy came in and looked at the brush strokes and compared those against like 90 million other Jackson Pollock paint. Well, yeah, that's it. And another guy came. I'm telling you, man. And then they brought it to another guy. He said, absolutely not. It's not a Jackson Pollock. I have a solid gold eye. There's no way. And another guy said, yes, there is.
Well, how did this movie end? Was it proven?
No, the movie ends with it unproven. And here's what happened. The lady got into business with a guy who's an art dealer. And this guy had been in prison for doing some bum deals. Now he's out and he's trying to reestablish himself. And he can't get reestablished because he has this... I'm telling you, it's the goofiest thing he ever saw. He's got this prison background. But he says, I want to take on her painting because I want to prove it's a Jackson Pollock. And I can't definitely, but I want to put together a syndicate of people that will invest in this because I'm sure that at some point we will prove it is. In other words, what he was asking people to do was to invest money on the hope, on the percentages that it's a Jackson Pollock. But he wasn't successful doing it.
Oh, I remember you talked about, and the people looked at him like he just crawled out from under a rock.
Well, they didn't look at him that way.
Man, I'd get all money for that.
Well, no, they didn't look at him like that, but they were saying, well, now, wait a minute, pal. He said, no, gentlemen, you're right. We don't absolutely know. But I can tell you, based upon my experience and the millions and the people that we've had, and he listed the names of the guys that had looked at it, this is a Jackson Pollock. I know that we're going to prove at some point in the future it is, and I'm asking you to invest as a syndicate in this painting. And now, right now, it's in a warehouse in New York City, air-conditioned, being kept, you know, pristine. But I don't know if they've ever proved it yet.
Well, that sounds like a lot of work to do for a painting that you're not really sure. But why would it just be out there in the world?
Well, apparently Jackson Pollock used to use his paintings, trade his paintings, give away his paintings. I mean, he did a lot. In the movie, it even shows him trading a painting for a case of beer, I think, at one point. So it wasn't anything that was unusual for him to give his paintings away sometimes to people and or use them as some kind of currency for things that he would need, you know.
Like what? Like a beer and stuff?
Yeah, like a case of beer one time or...
Carton of eggs?
A carton of eggs? Maybe a carton of eggs.
But probably like gum?
Yeah, chewing gum. I don't know, man. Just stuff. All right, we'll be right back. It's the Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com. Welcome back, world-famous Phil Henry Show. I just saw that tweet from Johnny Bean about when he started smoking.
Yeah, it said $1.23 a pack. You kidding me or something?
You ain't gonna believe when I started smoking. I started smoking, and this is bad. I started smoking cigarettes when I was 14. I quit, as you well know, going on four years ago. 35 cents a pack.
What are you talking about, man? That's like back in the olden days, man.
Yeah, it was back in the olden days. It was 1967. I was 14 years old, and cigarettes were 35 cents a pack.
Well, when you think about that, that's nuts. But you could go a long way on $5, $10 in those days.
Yeah, I remember hitchhiking to San Francisco when I was like 18.
Did what?
I hitchhiked to San Francisco. I thumbed. I got out on the road and I hitchhiked. It's something we used to do. We don't do it anymore, and I don't blame kids for not doing it anymore because it's dangerous as hell, and I'm lucky to be alive, okay? Now, having said that, can I get to the...
Yeah. Can't believe you hitchhiked.
I did. I hitchhiked to San Francisco one time, and I borrowed $10 from the dad of a friend of mine. I said, can I borrow $10? He says, yeah. $10 got me with a whole week. I was solid for a week on
$10. $10? Can you imagine that now? That doesn't pay for tap water.
Yeah, I mean, $10 today wouldn't go anywhere, but $10 is all I needed. I hitchhiked to San Francisco. I don't know what the hell I ate or what, but, you know, that was my thing. The reason why I hitchhiked around, because I thought I was going to be Jack London or something. I was, you know, writing a journal and thumbing places and doing all of that.
You're not going to be a beatnik or something.
Yeah, I was going to be a beatnik, smoking my 35-cent pack of cigarettes. And, you know, and I think back then, man, you could get a bottle of wine for 70 cents, you know.
Hey, did you go and get a bath for a nickel, like in a Clint Eastwood movie and stuff?
It ain't the 19th century, man, okay? Stuff was cheaper. What the hell do you want me to tell you? You know, I will tell you one thing. I mean, I went to London. I was in Europe in the 80s, and I saw gas prices in Europe, what we're paying right now, like $4 or $5 a gallon, right? Back then it was, I don't know, whatever, £3 for a gallon of gasoline. And it was, everybody made fun of that then. Everybody was looking at the gas prices over there saying, you got to be putting me on, man. How in the hell could you possibly afford it? Well, guess what, man? We're paying it now. You know, those guys in Europe in so many ways have kind of, I don't know what you call it. I mean, they've been through things that we're just now going through in terms of the economics. You know, they got a lot of motorcycles and mopeds and what are those things called?
The chutzpahs.
Yeah, the chutzpah.
What's a chutzpah?
It's that little motorcycle.
No, it ain't a chutzpah. Whatever it is.
No, that ain't a chutzpah. God, Phil, you get all, your face gets all scrunched up.
Well, that ain't what it's called. It's called something else. But, yeah, they're on the two-wheelers over there now, man, because that's, you know, obviously it saves on the gasoline. But, you know, the price of stuff goes up. What do you want me to tell you? You know, it just is. I can, and 35 cents for a pack of cigarettes. Now it's like, what, $5, $6, $7 in New York City, in Manhattan. And just so you know, I quit smoking because I got pneumonia and I went in a hospital. It wasn't the price. That didn't do diddly squat. If I still smoked, I'd still be smoking. I don't give a damn if it's $8 a carton, man. You know, or $8 a pack. And it wasn't about the cancer ads.
None of that stuff got to you like getting cancer?
No, none of that. Didn't bother me at all. Not even the outlawing it in, you know, you can't smoke here and you can't smoke there and you can't smoke somewhere else. None of that stuff, because you're going to find a place to smoke, big wow. It was, for me, it was winding up in a hospital and almost croaking. That's what did it. Okay, guys, anything you want to finish up with, Margaret?
Well, I just want people to know that I am going to be publishing a comprehensive set list of the music that we have been doing. And the song that I wanted everyone to know, because it was misunderstood, the song is called North Wind Blow Bob's Love to Me.
What?
I'm not talking to you, bud.
What is it called?
It's called North Wind, parentheses, Blow Bob's Love to Me. What are you looking at? If you laugh, damn you.
Well, why can't I laugh at that?
It's a beautiful song. It was written by Withby Booth, and it's a lovely song. I'm going to be doing it this weekend.
North Wind, Blow Bob's Love to Me.
You know, you're the only guy I know, Phil, that can take the title of a beautiful love song and turn it into filth within seconds.
Look, I didn't name it North Wind, Blow Bob's Love to Me. All right.
And what makes you think that's such a bad name?
It sounds ridiculous, that's all. But in any event, you're going to be doing that song.
I'll be doing that as a part of the set that we're going to be doing this weekend, yes.
Where are you going to be?
I don't know yet, but Frank's going to book me into another...
Well, you know what? I mean, all you can do is hope and pray, you know, that it isn't the same experience that it was. Maybe it ought to be... Maybe he ought to just start spending the money and produce these things himself. I don't know. So that'll be a set list of all of the songs up to this point.
Yes. Everything we've done up to this point, we will be publishing a master set list on there. I just wanted people to know that Northwind Blow Bop... I'm going to kick your...
Hey, watch it.
I told you it's not dirty.
You can't blame the guy for laughing at it. Northwind Blow Bob's Love to Me.
Well, if you say it like that, Phil.
And what was that other song that I saw something about, I Love It? I'm Deeply in Love with It. What the hell? Why wouldn't I think that's dirty?
Why is that dirty?
I'm Deeply in Love with It.
Yes.
What are you deeply in love with?
It's not about me.
But you're singing the song.
Yes, I'm playing the part of the character.
Okay, so what is the character singing about?
The character is singing about being in love with it.
In love with it. That's what I'm trying to figure out here.
Well, good luck.
Yeah. World famous Phil Henry Show. We'll see you guys tomorrow night. 7 o'clock on the El Pacifico and 10 o'clock on the Eastern Coastio. And that's standard time, booby. See you then. Later.